Well, it's only 11 o'clock. It's only 11 o'clock on a Sunday morning. How you doing? Are you well? October the 25th it is, 2020. And you might have gotten caught out by the clock turning back at 2 a.m. this morning, but you might not have. Welcome to the programme anyway, Sunday View, the newspapers, and the Sunday political talk shows as well, reviewed by me and you. You can talk to me on Twitter right now, it's at Richie Allen Show there.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yes, and it's very bad weather in the northwest of the country and elsewhere as well. It's not great now. It hasn't been great over the weekend. Lovely stuff. What's your own weekend been like? You can tell me. Of course, I'm happy to hear from you as usual. Mine has been nice and pleasant. Been a nice and pleasant weekend. Nice and pleasant. Yeah, who are you trying to convince? No, it has been. It has been. I've been watching with great interest this essential items in shops in Wales. And the man who went into Tesco and went mad and started pulling all the plastic sheeting off of the non-essential items that had been covered up by the shop to prevent people from buying them. Madhouse. It is a madhouse. Crazy, crazy stuff. Friday morning. 6:30 a.m. Friday morning. There was a ring on the doorbell. Friday, imagine 6:30, the doorbell ringing. Now, I'm up anyway. I'm up very early most days, every day. And it was the good news that the brand new Bruce Springsteen offering, Letter to You, the brand new album from The Boss, arrived in the post at 6:30 on a Friday morning. And I've played it a few times already. I might play it again this afternoon, but then again, I might get a frying pan across the face from herself if I do. So I'll think hard about it later on. Maybe after one or two glasses of wine, you know. I'll play a song from it later on as well. I think you'll like it. I think you'll like it. Some of you are a crowd of awful idiots, some of you. I put a promo video for Sunday View online this morning where I joked about having a hair transplant and some of you believed it. What's wrong with you? Jesus wept. Of course I'm not having a hair transplant. Where would I get the money? Number one. And number two, of course I wouldn't have a hair transplant. I've not got a vein bone in my body. Jesus. No. I was joking. No hair transplant for me. I'll always be the BBG. Right, song from The Boss's new album, Later. Did you see this? I talked about it last week. Wake up! I talked about this last week. South Korean authorities stick to flu vaccine plan after deaths rise to 48. Wow. This is Reuters. This is Reuters, right? Right. It isn't one of them conspiracy websites. The number of South Koreans who have died after getting the flu shot has risen to 48. Said who? Said the Korea Disease Control and Prevention Agency. Right? But then said that the vaccines would continue to reduce the chance of having simultaneous epidemics, so we're going to keep vaccinating people with it. Are we going to pause? No! No, of course not! No! They eat their dogs over there, don't they? They don't have much common sense in that bloody place. Anyway, that's proper xenophobia right there. How can you eat dogs? Right, okay. I know my vegan friends now will be screaming at me, you bloody hypocrite, Paldy. Scream away. I can take the criticism. So, 48 people have dropped dead after getting the flu vaccine, but no, we're going to carry on. But they went on to say, after reviewing death cases so far, it isn't the time to suspend a flu vaccination program, since vaccination is very crucial this time of year, considering the COVID-19 outbreaks, according to KDCA Director Jong Yoon Kyung. Jong said the review had shown no direct link between the flu shots and the 26 deaths they've investigated. They've only investigated 26 out of 48. No direct link, they said. Some of these people had cardiovascular, cerebrovascular and other disorders. Yes, I'm sure they did, but maybe the vaccine tipped them over the edge, maybe. But anyway, they're not going to suspend the program. If you're in Korea, and you're planning on having the flu jab, and this has been made public, this information in Korea, if you do have the flu jab, well, your level of stupidity has yet to be measured by modern science, I reckon. Massive story, right? Huge story. 48 people dead after flu jab, right? So they're obviously covering this, aren't they? On the on UK television news today and the radio, aren't they? They're obviously covering it on Sky and the BBC. Yes, you say? Yes?
You stupid, ignorant son of a bitch, dumb bastard! Jesus Christ, I've met some dumb bastards in my time, but you outdo them all.
Of course they're not covering it on Sky and the BBC this morning, that people are dropping like flies in Korea. Of course not. This is the UK media this morning.
All right, move on. Nothing to see here. Please disperse. Nothing to see here, please.
Nothing to see here, please. Oh, yeah, Andrew Marr's producer said to him this morning, hey, Andrew, we better talk about what's happening in Korea. Of course not. Let's have a tune before we look at the front pages of the newspapers. This is Sunday View with me, the BBG, and Glenn Campbell kicking us off this morning. Because this is gorgeous. Good morning to you. Good morning. What a tune that is. Glenn Campbell kicking off Sunday View this morning. Welcome to the programme. You might be just joining in. You might be just switching on. Let's go straight to the front pages of the UK Sunday newspapers. The Observer leads with top children's doctors attack Tories over free school meals. I'm sure you've heard about this. I'm sure you've been following this. Undoubtedly you have. Marcus Rashford, superstar footballer, has been successful in recent times in persuading the government to provide free meals for children outside of term. But this time the government is saying, well, we can't at the moment, or we won't for whatever reasons, provide the service in the upcoming half term and in the Christmas holidays. So this is a big story. So more than 2,000 doctors have condemned the government over the free school meals stance, according to The Observer. A growing number of councils and businesses have offered to provide free meals during half term. In a letter coordinated by the Royal College of Paediatrics and Child Health, medics called on the UK government to match the pledges of the Welsh and Scottish governments and the Northern Ireland executive to provide meals for children at least until next Easter's holidays. Right, you understand what's going on, right? Kids get their meals when they're at school. When they're not at school, half terms and holidays, traditionally, they wouldn't get those meals. But during this COVID nonsense, when children were not in school, Marcus Rashford led a very successful campaign to have them provided with those meals. And he wants it to continue. Here's the Conservative MP, Brandon Lewis, who these days is also the Northern Ireland secretary. Here he is with Sophie Ridge.
Well, I always see it as a positive if I get to spend the first part of my Sunday chatting with you, Sophie, as I did a few weeks ago. I think actually our policy on this is, I know this is a very emotive issue. It's a sensitive issue, and it's something that affects families in my constituency as well as around the country. I think the position we have taken is the right position, because what we're looking to do is ensure we deal with child poverty at the core and put the structure in place that means even in school holidays, children can get access to the food that they need.
Enjoyed the flattery in the answer, but sadly it's not going to make me move off the topic that quickly. I'm genuinely trying to work out why the government is opposing this. Is it because it's too expensive, or because is it because you don't agree with the principle of it?
Well, actually, Sophie, I would say the premise of your question is not entirely right. First of all, we support free school meals. They've been in place since 1906, and we as a government have had them.
I'm asking you about...
We're in a different place to that. Well, obviously, by definition, schools are not open in the holidays. So we're in a different place to where we were earlier in the summer, where we had the full lockdown and schools were closed. 99% are now open, and they're going into that period of school holiday. The schools are closed. So it's what do we have in place when schools are closed? We've already put that facility in place. We've increased universal credit, so people have got more support, over £1,000 on average across the country for the year. But we've also put in place around £63 million to support local authorities to help people in their communities at a time of hardship. Very specifically, to allow local authorities, they know their areas best, they're closest to the residents that they serve, and they can put in place the schemes that they feel can make sure that people who need that extra support, very targeted and very directly, can get that support. We're seeing councils around the country doing that for this week very directly.
And what about Marcus Rashford himself then, the footballer who was recently awarded with an MBE for his efforts here?
Well, I've got to say, I think Marcus Rashford has run a campaign that's clearly inspired people across the country. A huge credit to him for that. I mean, it's a phenomenal thing to raise the profile in the way that he has about child poverty. And he has got such a clear passion and understanding of that situation. I congratulate him for that. And actually, all those organisations out there that are rallying to the cause to work and help and support people in their communities. As I say, our position as a government is that we support that. We're doing that ourselves, and we're putting that money in place for local authorities to have to support those most in need. And the welfare system through the universal credit system as well is putting that extra support in so people can ensure that they can feed their families properly and healthily through the school holidays. And obviously when schools are in place, free school meals are there.
Yeah. They're so full of praise for Marcus Rashford on television, but I bet it's different behind the scenes in the Tory corridors at Westminster, all these old men, all these old Tories. I bet you it's a lot different. On TV, oh, Marcus Rashford, a wonderful young man, so proud of him, he's brilliant. Behind the scenes, it's like, am I to understand that a black footballer is asking us for money? A black footballer, shouldn't he be chasing his dinner with a spear? That's what is probably going on behind the scenes. That's proper racism. Sunday Times front page revealed how elderly paid price of protecting NHS from COVID. Now, this is good. Revealed how elderly paid price of protecting NHS from COVID. So the Sunday Times, which I subscribe to for my sins, the show does. The over 80s were denied intensive care treatment at the height of the pandemic, according to an investigation in the Sunday Times. The paper claims the documents drawn up at the request of Professor Chris Whitty, the chief medical officer, outlined guidelines called a triage tool. These guidelines were used to prevent many elderly COVID patients from getting ventilation in intensive care, according to the Times. Hospitals in Manchester, Liverpool, London, the Midlands and the South East reportedly used the criteria set out in these documents. The Department of Health and Social Care said that the guidance was never formally published. Here's Helen Lewis from The Atlantic speaking to the Marr show, Andrew Marr himself, this morning. Helen Lewis.
So this is the idea that over 80s were essentially triaged out of being either admitted to intensive care or in some cases to hospital altogether during the early phase of the pandemic, the so-called first wave. You know, the government's really pushed back very strongly on this, but one thing that has been very apparent is that during that first period of the coronavirus, some pretty big errors of judgment now, it looks in retrospect, were made, both about discharging elderly people from care into care homes from hospitals and taking COVID with them. And then also, you know, the idea of the Nightingale hospitals, which were built and much lauded and then only ended up treating really a few dozen people. So you ended up with a situation where routine operations were cancelled. You know, there were intensive care beds free, but people were dying at home. And the ONS figures are very clear on this. You know, there are tens of thousands of excess deaths at home during that period. So I think this is a story that is going to rumble on despite the denials, because clearly lots of people feel that their loved ones were not treated very well, particularly when you think about the number of people in that very early phase who died alone, who weren't allowed, you know, relatives in to see them. Perhaps they had to FaceTime in to say goodbye to their grandmothers or grandfathers.
Yes, the truth is in the pages of the UK newspapers. That's the irony. For all the criticism of the media that I've levied, I mean, I've levelled criticism at the UK media forever, the Irish media and the global media. But since this all kicked off, the papers between them have published the information to destroy the narrative that we need to be locking down, we need to be forced or compelled to take a vaccine in the future to return to normal. All the evidence is there. Far, far, far more people have been killed by other means directly linked to the lockdown itself then could have been killed by any virus. It's all there if you want to read it. Tragically. That's the Sunday Times big story. The Sunday Telegraph, isolation for test and trace could be halved, is the headline. It says that the 2-week isolation period for people who have come into contact with somebody infected with COVID could be halved to between 7 and 10 days. Why? Well, because of fears that people are not complying with the test and trace system. Sir Bernard Jenkin, chairman of the Commons Liaison Committee, has written in the Sunday Telegraph today saying there is a vacuum of leadership in test and trace which is destroying cooperation and compliance. In that article, he called for the woman heading it up. Her name is Dido Harding. He's called for her to resign or to be sacked. We'll come back to that a little bit later on. Big story on the front page of the Mail on Sunday today. The headline is NHS staff set to get a vaccine in weeks. Wow. NHS staff should get the vaccine within weeks, according to the Mail on Sunday, which claims that it's seen an email sent by an NHS trust chief to his staff revealing that the health service is preparing for a national vaccination programme before Christmas. So a leaked email, the Sunday Mail, the Mail on Sunday says, we've seen a leaked email preparing, telling our members to prepare for a national vaccination programme for key workers, for frontline workers, before Christmas. Now, on the idea that a vaccine will be available within weeks here in the UK for doctors and nurses and hospital workers, Donald Trump has been making similar promises in the US on the campaign trail, you might be aware. Well, Andrew Marr had Anthony Fauci on today. Dr. Anthony Fauci, if you please. He's the man advising the US government on how to respond to COVID-19. Andrew Marr asked Fauci, was Donald Trump right to say that a vaccine will be available in a few weeks? Here's Fauci.
I think we will know. Yes, I believe he said that correctly. We will know whether a vaccine is safe and effective by the end of November, the beginning of December. The question is, once you have a safe and effective vaccine or more than one, how can you get it to the people who need it as quickly as possible? So the amount of doses that will be available in December will not certainly be enough to vaccinate everybody. You'll have to wait several months into 2021. But what will happen is that there has been a prioritization set so that individuals such as healthcare workers will very likely get first shot at it, as will then likely people who are in the category of being at an increased risk for complications. That could start by the end of this year, the beginning, January, February, March of next year. But when you talk about vaccinating a substantial proportion of the population so that you can have a significant impact on the dynamics of the outbreak, that very likely will not be into the second or third quarter of the year.
Hmm. Fauci. Yeah, Trump was right to say a vaccine could be available before Christmas, but not one for the wider population. So Marr then said to Fauci, how important is it that the politicians shut up with their personal opinions and listen to the experts? That was the question. Fauci's response.
Oh, I think it's very important because, you know, we have a situation which is understandable. People look at what their leaders say and do, and you can positively or negatively influence behavior. One of the things I'm concerned about in the United States is that part of the anti-science translates maybe into anti-vaccine, particularly among some of the more vulnerable people like the minorities in our population. It would really be a shame if we have a safe and effective vaccine, but a substantial proportion of the people do not want to take the vaccine because they don't trust authority.
Yeah, why wouldn't they trust authority? Maybe they remember that the swine flu vaccine was delivered at the speed of light and that many, many, many people who took that, trusting in their government and in the medical authorities, came down with narcolepsy maybe. That's a fact. I know this program is gaining hundreds, if not thousands, of new listeners a week. I know this. If you're new to the programme, please check everything. It's a fact. Why wouldn't people be reluctant to believe their governments? Why wouldn't they say, No thanks, I don't think I'll be having that, thank you very much. What a shame, says Fauci. It'll be if people don't trust us and take this toxic tidal wave of pus that we want them to take. Anyway, he goes on.
That would really be unfortunate if that's the case.
Is suggesting that people should inject bleach following the science.
Mara's some dipstick, isn't he?
No, of course not. I mean, that's obvious.
Who's suggesting that you inject bleach? Who's recommending that?
Can you become immune to the virus?
Well, now, the answer should obviously be yes. Mara says to a doctor who's supposed to be a doctor, right? Can you become immune? The answer should be yes. Yes, Andrew, over the centuries, we have learned that when somebody is exposed to an infection and they become ill, we learn that their body fights it off, but the body has memory, and our cells have memories, and our cells build up antibodies, and we keep watch. Should that infection come back, we're ready to defend, the body is ready to defend. So yes, yes is the answer. But Fauci, of course, well...
It depends on what you mean by immune. Yeah. I mean, if immune means that you get vaccinated and you develop an immunological response that protects you from getting infected, that is really the fundamental definition of immunity. It's an immunological phenomenon. But the idea that you just are protected for no reason just because you feel you're protected, that's not the case. I think the word immunity sometimes is not used correctly.
Yeah, what they've tried to do is turn conventional medical knowledge on its head in recent years and remove, basically to dismiss what we've known for forever, that our bodies naturally build up immunity against infections. So they've tried to turn that knowledge, which we've had forever, on its head, dismiss it, and introduce the idea that immunity can only be achieved through mass vaccination. These are criminal tyrants, these people. They're not doctors. Fauci's not a doctor. He's a tyrant. He's a salesman. He's a salesman for Bill Gates and for the biggest pharmaceutical companies in the world. So Marr then asks him about Trump. He says, Marr says, when Donald Trump says that he is now immune, is he right?
You know the answer to that. No, it's not.
But no, he's not, says Fauci.
But this is really important. When you see big crowds of people without masks milling around and jostling, what do you think?
Well, I get concerned by that, and I've been vocal about that for some time now, that what we need is, and I keep saying it, and that gets back to one of the first questions you asked me, if we uniformly wore masks, kept distance, avoid congregate settings, crowds, particularly without masks and particularly indoors, then if we did those things together with washing hands as frequently as you can, we could go a long way to not only prevent the surges that we're seeing, but to turn around the ones that are already ongoing.
Yeah. Anthony Fauci speaking to Andrew Marr. I believe the conversation took place on Friday, recorded for Sunday. Lepa says, just like when you have chickenpox, Richie, and you never get it again and pass down the pathways of immune system response memory to your children. Yes, well said. Let's scroll on down. Hi to Bristol Being, who has tweeted me a link to where Fauci said some months ago that masks are ridiculous. There really is no reason to wear a mask. Shall we hear that? I think it's well worth hearing it. Thank you for tweeting it to me. The miracle of modern technology. We can slide that clip in now. Cheers to my mate in Bristol.
Right now in the United States, people should not be walking around with masks.
Yeah.
You're sure of it? Because people are listening really closely to this.
Right now, people should not be walking. There's no reason to be walking around with a mask. When you're in the middle of an outbreak, wearing a mask might make people feel a little bit better, and it might even block a droplet. But it's not providing the perfect protection that people think that it is. And often there are unintended consequences. People keep fiddling with the mask and they keep touching their face.
And can you get some schmutz sort of staying inside there?
Of course, of course. But when you think masks, you should think of healthcare providers needing them and people who are ill.
Yeah, that was Fauci. Good job. Liz tweets, the good doctor is digging his path to hell with every word he speaks, says Liz. Liz, I don't share your belief in a hell, but I'm beginning to hope you're right, Liz. To be honest, I'm beginning to hope you're right. William tweets, Richie's the biologist, Dr. Tom Cowan, has exposed COVID. It's a computer assumption. John Rappaport has covered this, says William. Thanks, William, for that. Paul Burchill tweets, Richie, it would make more sense to vaccinate the older population, but then it isn't about protecting anyone, he says. Lovely. A lot of really interesting tweets. David Stanford says, well, that's the NHS screwed. Let me scroll on down. Hi to Julia. Good morning, Julia. Hi to Andy Foley, who makes a good point. Richie, regarding school meals, it takes 5 weeks plus to get a universal credit payment. The kids will be back to school by then. Well done. And Mr. Mojo says, thank you, Mr. Mojo. Richie, if they manage to grow hair on your head, we will bring back the clap for frontline workers. Good man. I like that. 28 and a half minutes past the hour. Bruce Springsteen's new album, Letter to You, has been released to universal acclaim. 5-star reviews across the board. Are they being too kind to the boss, are they? Because of his age, he is a septuagenarian, you know. No, they're not. It is an absolutely beautiful album, not a filler track on it. Here's the opening song, entitled 1 Minute You're Here. Very reflective tune. That's why I mentioned septuagenarian. Young, you're young. You're young if you're a septuagenarian these days. But I suppose you're having a look forward and you're having a look back at the same time, maybe. This is great. 1 Minute You're Here from the brand new Bruce Springsteen album. Back with plenty more chat on your Richie Allen Radio Show Sunday View after this. Yeah, it's gorgeous. That 1 Minute You're Here is the tune, the opening track on the brand new Bruce Springsteen album, Letter to You, which is magnificent. Back with more, lots more, I should say, from the papers after this. Don't go anywhere.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Now, welcome back. It is Sunday View with the BBG, Richie Allen. I'm in Salford. It's exactly 26 minutes to the top of the hour on a fairly miserable Sunday morning here in the Northwest. It isn't even going to improve greatly, sadly, in the coming hours. The only thing, I've been chatting briefly with Jean Ann there via the message service. The only negative thing about Bruce's new album, Letter to You, is the cover. As far as album covers go, it's diabolical. I have no idea who was commissioned to create an album cover for The Boss. I'm assuming, making an ass out of you and me, I'm assuming that he had to sign off on it. It's pretty bad. Doesn't do the album justice, but there you go. There you go. Nitpicking. Sunday Mirror, stop failing our NHS heroes. The Sunday Mirror alleges that the National Health Service is battling a mental health crisis. New figures obtained in their own investigation. Apparently 300,000 workers are near breaking point in the NHS. The Sunday Mirror adds the 2 million days have been taken off for mental illness. 2 million days over the course of the COVID thing for mental illness. Now, Chand Nagpal is the chair of the British Medical Association Council. Sophie Ridge asked him about a recent survey of doctors. You'll hear her question. The answer is very, very interesting.
You've done a survey for members, haven't you, about their concerns about cancelled appointments or other people not being able to access the NHS in the way that they should be able to. What does it show?
So our survey shows, and it's just been published today, so it's very up to date from about 7,000 doctors. What it shows is they are extremely worried about their ability to care in the coming months. You know, doctors do not want to see patients unable to access care, and that refers to cancer patients, heart disease patients, patients with rheumatological conditions. They don't want to be in a position where there are millions on waiting lists and not knowing when they will receive their care. And that's one of the real worries. We mustn't forget, you know, the several million who are now waiting for hip operations, cataracts, etc. They have no idea when they will be seen. And what doctors are also worried about is staffing. At the moment, four in 10 doctors tell us that their clinical colleagues are absent from work because of self-isolation or because they are infected themselves. That is adding pressure to a system when we started before the pandemic with 10,000 doctor vacancies. So there's a very real issue about staffing.
Yeah, I'm sure there is. You heard him there, about 7,000 doctors surveyed. Doctors are terrified of the implications for people with non-COVID illnesses and conditions. This whole story is falling apart at the seams, isn't it? And yet, on they plough. The government, its advisors, and the media. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Let's look at the front page of the Sunday Express. Ministers fear Christmas virus rebels. Christmas virus rebels. Listen. Listen. Ministers are worried that families, people like you and me, we might ignore the restrictions over Christmas, that we might do what we bloody well like over Christmas and drink and eat and be merry with whomever we like. So they're worried about that. Right. So the so-called experts and the pundits, that's the so-called experts, the SAGE committee, Fauci, obviously not in the UK, Fauci, but Patrick Vallance, chief scientific advisor, Chris Whitty, chief medical officer, all of those experts are in agreement that it's going to be lonely this Christmas for OAPs particularly. The pundits are in agreement. Here's a pundit, regular Sky newspaper reviewer, the anthropologist Mary Ann Okata. This is the sort of crap you're exposed to if you're listening to or watching the UK mass media.
People are finding all sorts of ways to break the rules, and we're watching our MPs break the rules and chief government advisors with no seeming penalty. It makes people go, well, why am I bothering trying to do the right thing when no one else is? And that means that we're at an incredibly dangerous point, because this requires us all to work collectively and suffer a little bit ourselves. No, you don't get to meet your friends. No, you don't go and, you know, get together around a table for turkey and stuffing. But it does potentially mean that the NHS isn't overrun, that our healthcare workers don't suffer profound...
Oh, Jesus. Somebody slap her in the face with a big fish. Listen to that crap. Oh, so you don't get to have a good time at Christmas. You don't get to meet your granny and granddad. You don't get to do all that, but don't worry about it. It keeps people safe in the NHS. This is horse shit, isn't it?
No, you don't go and, you know, get together around a table for turkey and stuffing. But it does potentially mean that the NHS isn't overrun, that our healthcare workers don't suffer profound mental health crises and exhaustion this winter, and that people don't die unnecessarily.
Yeah, we need to look at the bigger picture.
That's the presenter, Stephen Dixon. We need to look at the bigger picture, he says. Yeah, to hell with it. We have to accept that Christmas is stuffed. No pun intended. New slogans. I want some help from you this morning. It's a competition with no prize, by the way. There isn't any prizes here. Let me tell you, no prizes. So, new slogans for Christmas. Let's get some slogans for Christmas and send them into Matt Hancock. At the moment, we've got hands, face, space. They keep repeating this mantra over and over again. Hands, face, space. You've probably seen the ads on ITV and on Sky. You've seen the NHS ads, haven't you? Where people, actors, posing as NHS staff, are telling people to keep your distance, wear the face mask, and to keep washing your hands. So we've got hands, face, space now. Any slogans for Christmas? What about don't be a turkey this Christmas and protect granny? Does that work? Don't be a turkey this Christmas and protect granny. Well, help help me out here. Mark Tilsley is an epidemiologist. He was on BBC Breakfast this morning. Mark Tilsley, epidemiologist. Leicester. He's based in Leicester. Any chance of a bit of Christmas, Mark? Asked the presenter.
What hope is there that we'll have anything like a normal Christmas this year?
Come on, Mark, give us some feckin' hope. Christmas!
Well, I think saying we'll have a normal Christmas, sadly, I think that's not realistic. But what I would really like, I think it's very, very important that we do what we can so that at least families can be together at Christmas. I would like to see something along the lines of, say, we can relax the rule of six to something like a rule of 10 or something which allows most larger families to be together. But if we want to achieve that, we really need to take action now over the coming weeks to bring that R number down, to buy ourselves that time. I think it's very important that we have a little bit of a relaxation over Christmas so that people can be together. But to do that, it needs urgent action now so that we can reduce the incidence and get it down to a level that we can relax a little bit over the Christmas period.
That shit crazy. Let's work really hard now. Stay indoors, wash your hands, wear the masks. And if you do enough of it, you might be able to relax a little bit at Christmas. I'm still laughing at this. Jimmy Cranky, last Thursday, do you remember? Nicola Sturgeon, First Minister, for no reason, in the middle of a press conference, looking down the camera, out of the blue, deciding to address Scotland's children. Scotland's bairns. Here we go.
Look, this is really tough stuff, and I've seen Jason Leach's comments this morning, and I've seen the totality of his comments.
That's the wrong fucking clip then, after that build-up. It's the wrong clip, Paulie. Hang on, I'll dig it out. Hang on. Keep your fur on. Hang on. Cranky talking about Santa, wasn't it? Have I got it, or have I deleted it? Have I? Probably deleted, have I? Is it gone? No, have I got it? Oh, God. I think I might have it. Here we go. Here's Cranky talking about Santa.
And firstly, on Santa, I'm pretty sure if there are any kids watching, I know Santa, it will not be prevented from delivering your presents.
Why is that?
On Christmas Eve, Santa is a key worker.
Love that. We need to isolate that and just play it over and over again. Santa is...
In your presence on Christmas Eve, Santa is a key worker.
Key worker.
He's got lots of magic powers that make him safe to do that. So if he's having to do grotto appearances by Zoom, that's to keep you safe. It's not that Santa's...
Santa is having to do grotto appearances by Zoom. It's for your own good, kiddies.
...at any risk. Santa will be delivering presents across the world as normal.
As normal. All right. Oh, Jesus. That was Thursday. Got to keep that in the audio bank. Got to keep that one. Got to keep that one for future use. Where were we before I distracted myself there? Sunday People leads with gambling kids left £100,000 in debt. One of the things that's scaring the bejesus out of children and keeping them out of schools and keeping them glued to their devices, their phones and their tablets. One of the things that's come out of that is that children are gambling online with relative ease. From the age of 13, some children accumulating debts of £100,000. Horrifying figures, says the director of Britain's first clinic set up to help children gamblers. Kids are screwed. Anne Longfield is the children's minister in this country. And here she is talking about a mental health crisis for the nation's youngsters with Sophie Ridge. Anne Longfield, listen carefully.
I'm keen to touch on mental health as well. It's something we were talking about with Dr. Rosanna Allen Khan too. Are you concerned about the impact that lockdown and the social restrictions are having on the mental health of children?
Well, kids have found this really tough. All their normal routine was kind of taken from under their feet overnight when schools closed back in March. And, you know, for kids, time's different. It feels like a lifetime for us. But for them, you know, this could be a large portion of their experience as they've been growing up. They don't know what's going to come. They don't know what's ahead. We've seen that there's high levels of stress in children during the pandemic. And actually, a third of all children saying they're worried about their future. They don't know what their prospects will be. And there were some really alarming figures out this week from actually the NHS and ONS that showed that now one in six children probably have a mental health condition. Now, that
one in six children probably have a mental health condition, she alleges. I don't know if that's true, but I know that the terror And terror is not a word I would use lightly. But the terror the children have been subjected to throughout this, especially at the very beginning of it, must have had and must be having some profound effect on their psyche. It must do. You know, this, I mean, they created in the minds of children, primary school children, that they were basically in danger of dying any moment from an unseen killer pandemic disease, and that not only could it kill them and their parents, but it could also kill their grandparents. That's trauma, that. I don't have the qualification to describe it, let alone prescribe it. But as a child who was subjected to trauma, I understand the impact it has on children. It's a shocking stuff, this. And she even talks in a moment about providing mental health counsellors for every school in the country. Scary stuff, this.
Now, that's a huge number of children in any classroom at any time. Before the pandemic, Simon Stevens, the head of the NHS, called children's mental health an epidemic. Well, it's getting worse because of the pandemic. So I want to see a really robust response from that from government in their spending review. I want to see a mental health counsellor in every school, part and parcel of life for kids, so they can get the help when they need it.
My God. I want to see a mental health counsellor in every school, part and parcel of life for kids, she said. And nobody outside of this programme in the United Kingdom today is talking about this. Nobody. Children, the parents of children are blissfully unaware of not only what has been done to their children, but what they plan to do to them in the future. Part and parcel of life. To have a mental health counsellor observing your every move, inviting you to come and talk to him or her about your mental health problems. These are children that should be rolling around in filth, kicking footballs, throwing basketballs, chasing around after one another, talking about the latest film that they are interested in. But no, they've convinced them, they've terrorised them into believing that they're living through a deadly, deadly pandemic that means that they and their families are effectively at death's door. That's what they have convinced children of. The effect? Anybody's guess on what it will do to them going forward. 12 minutes to the top of the hour. It's enraging stuff, this. Counsellors in every school, I suppose, would result in the mass medication of youngsters further down the line. Now, spare sending me tweets about Ritalin and ADHD. I've done that to death. I'm well aware of it. Thank you. Not saying they haven't been mass medicating children anyway, but they'll be ramping that up in the future. And the most bizarre headline on the front pages of the UK newspapers today is this on the front page of the Star on Sunday. The headline is, "The price is fright," ironically, in light of what we were talking about. The price is fright, but it's not about scaring children. It's about Bruce Forsyth, who died in 2017, I believe. Several of the front pages dedicating the tabloids, dedicating some space to Strictly Come Dancing, which is a nonsense light entertainment show on the BBC. But the Daily Star on Sunday, "The Price is Fright," alleges that Bruce Forsyth's ghost is haunting the London Palladium, the theatre where his ashes were scattered. The paper quotes actors and actresses preparing for panto there, describing a friendly presence. Bruce Forsyth, it must be. Must be him. Nice to see you, to see you. Nice. Bruce. Right, here's a story. We might finish with this. We might not, depending on time. Big story, this. The British Army is being drafted in to Tier 3 areas to enforce coronavirus restrictions. The British Army drafted in to enforce coronavirus restrictions in Tier 3, according to the Mail on Sunday. And it has evidence to support that claim. Remember, Boris Johnson, remember? Remember Matt Nocock, remember? Saying that, oh, don't worry about the army. If we ever do use the army, it'll be logistically. It'll be to help us transport maybe testing kits around the country if we're stuck for a bit of transport, logistic help, that sort of thing. It'll never be enforcement. Liar, liar, pants on fire, because the army is being drafted in to help with enforcement, to make sure that people are staying indoors, to make sure that people are not meeting with groups of people outside of their own household. See, as it stands in this tier three, there are three tiers recently introduced in the UK, three tiers, level one, level two, level three, obviously level three being the most stringent, okay, the most severe. And when you're in level three, as Lancashire is, Greater Manchester and Liverpool, you can't meet with your next door neighbour. Your next door neighbour is legally prohibited from coming around to your house. And to help enforce this, the army is going to be brought in. The army has been tasked with identifying clusters of local infections, helping control outbreaks and taking action against businesses failing to comply with the COVID-19 rules. Five Army and Navy environmental health officers trained in outbreak management have been sent to Liverpool alone. Further teams will be moved into other high-risk areas within the coming weeks. The army policing on the streets of the UK. Did you believe them when they said the army wouldn't get involved in policing? Did you? Do you feel like a bit of a plonker now? You should do. The military aid to civil authorities mechanism, which is known as MACA, ironically, when you think Liverpool, the military aid to civil authorities mechanism allows the government, along with local authorities, to formally request assistance from the armed forces. And according to the Telegraph newspaper, which is backing up these claims, the Telegraph has found that the armed forces were carrying out 32 tasks under MACA on Friday, 2 days ago. Lieutenant General Tyrone Urch, the UK's standing joint commander, told the Telegraph, "We're extremely proud to be able to support this national effort and remain ready to respond to all requests for further support throughout the winter period." The army policing on the streets of the UK. I don't like saying "I told you so," so I won't. Now, the Conservative MP Bernard Jenkin was on the Ridge programme today to bitch, to piss and to moan about Dido Harding. Dido Harding has been heading up the UK National Test and Trace programme. He knows the test and trace thing. You download the app and you leave your Bluetooth turned on, and one day you get a call to say, "Hey, Paldy, you spent some time with somebody who's got COVID." "Yeah, and?" "Get home, stay there for 2 weeks, and if you leave, you'll be arrested." That's the test and trace. Bernard Jenkin, run by Dido Harding. Bernard Jenkin wrote in the Telegraph today that she should be sacked. Sacked, get rid of her. And by all accounts now, she couldn't organise a shag in a brothel or a piss up in a brewery, because nobody, or not enough people, is downloading it or using it. That's because the people, sheeple, as they might appear to us sometimes, are actually not as stupid as we think they are. They're not downloading it. So Ridge asked him first about public trust. No, she didn't. They spoke about Dido Harding. I don't want to hear any of that garbage. They then move on and she asks him about public trust, and he answers with a recommendation as to who might run test and trace in the future.
Do you think there's a risk that the government is effectively losing people?
Oh, definitely, yes. I think the whole row about free school meals is a touchstone of how little faith a lot of people now have in the government's conduct of this. And the government can get it back. But that's why I recommend that, in fact, leadership of test and trace should be handed over to a very senior military person who is used to dealing in a crisis situation, under stress, at scale, with very high degrees of complexity and organization. That's what a senior military commander is trained to do. Hey. And their ability in that is unique. Now, there are lots of military people involved in test and trace, but they're not involved in the overall leadership of it. And that's the most fundamental recommendation I'm making.
Test and trace, which is as dystopian, as Orwellian, as anything you might have imagined before March of this year. I say that to my newer listeners. Jesus, you would have thought, that's dystopian, that, isn't it, eh? Eh? Getting people to download an app to keep their Bluetooth turned on all the time, and they can be contacted by an authority figure at any time and told to stay indoors. Jesus, you might have said, ah, oh, that's dystopian. They want to give it to the army to run now. At the same time, they're asking the army to help police restrictions in Tier 3 regions. Well, this is where we are. That is where I leave you today. Thanks for all your tweets, by the way. I really appreciate them. I enjoy reading them. We will be back tomorrow. Now, there is a strong possibility that I will be joined tomorrow by Dr. Vernon Coleman. I'm not quite sure. Speaking to him during the week last week, he talked about coming back on for a chat, and I said, no problem. Monday, maybe. I'm not sure. He might very well be with me tomorrow. If not tomorrow, maybe in the week, but it might be tomorrow. I don't know. You see, the organisational skills there of me, diabolical. But I think he might be around, an old man in a chair. His videos, all of them, if you haven't come across him, are on brandnewtube.com. He is an old man in a chair, Vernon Coleman. And vernoncoleman.com, the website, transcripts there of everything that he has done this year. vernoncoleman.com. Right. That is it? Might be it. Is it for the... It is. Thanks for tuning in today. Loved your company. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. I'm told in Saddleworth, which is not too far from here, the weather is a damn sight better. Here, it's very changeable. And, well, showers, apparently, on the menu this afternoon. Showers. Okay, then. And do yourselves a favour, by the way. As much as you possibly can, disengage from the mainstream media and the independent media. It'll do you the world of good, believe me. You know, take a break from it, because it's very, very oppressive, this information. Get outdoors, spend a bit of time outdoors as much as you possibly bloody well can, and it'll do you the power of good. And that's not just me saying that. The aforementioned Vernon Coleman has been saying that to people as well. From the BBG, it's adieu, au revoir, speak tomorrow.